Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Gabal and Coffee. It's wonderful to see you all here today. Steffi, welcome. Okay, so we have, in my opinion, a really great class, but like I said before, I'll let y'all decide. So the topic that I sent out in the email is paradox. And we're going to talk about primarily the omnipotence paradox in the context of paradoxes, which we'll get to soon. But first, the Baal Shem Tov taught, Baal Shem Tov was the founder of the Chabad movement, lived 300 years ago. The Baal Shem Tov taught that everything we see and hear, everything we see and hear is a lesson for us, a spiritual lesson in our self-improvement and service of God, service of a higher power. So when we think about that statement, it's a really bold call to action. I mean, think about it. The Baal Shem Tov doesn't say that holy things that you see, spiritual messages that you hear, are messages that you should take to heart. No, the Baal Shem Tov says everything a person sees or hears is a lesson to self-improvement and to a higher service. Everything. And so today I'd like to talk about the Netflix movie that is capturing the attention of the nation called Bird Box. Anybody familiar with Bird Box?
No, can you explain? No, I have no clue.
Yeah, for those of you that haven't seen it, that want to see it, I will tell you, especially all those of you streaming live online, so I will tell you that you may want to, this will be a spoiler alert, so if you plan on watching it, you may not want to hear what I'm about to say. Perfect. So here we go. So Bird Box is a film based on a book. The book is written by a fellow, I forgot his name, who sounds like a Jewish name. We can't confirm it because my Googling this morning did not corroborate that. But it came close. I got very close to confirming it, but still not 100% sure. The movie, the premise is like this. There are people that are dying. I don't want to give away too much. People are dying, and the only way to not die is basically to not see. Because if you look, you're not going to make it. That's the premise. Why, how, where, when, I'll leave that up to the film to explain or to not explain. But the premise is, if you see, you're not going to make it. You're not going to survive. So the only survivors in this apocalyptic situation, the only survivors are our friend Sandra Bullock, right? Well, I don't know what her character name is in the film. And two kids who survive by virtue of wearing blindfolds, 24/7. Take off the blindfold, perish. That's the premise. That's why the blindfolds. And now, and in the movie, they have to get around and get to safety, whatever it is. And there's a safe house, I don't want to give away too much, that they have to get to. And if they get, and to get around, they have to get around with the blindfold on. And so apparently, there are scenes where she's driving or whatever, she's navigating with a blindfold. Hence, now, what's going viral is the Bird Box challenge, which is, can you operate a motor vehicle with a blindfold? And we had our first accident last week. You may have seen the news articles about that. Do you see it? Yeah, some teenager crashed a car trying the Bird Box challenge.
What's Bird Box?
I don't want to give away too much, but that's the safe house. But the core point is that the only survivors are those that are wearing the blindfolds and a school for the blind. Because they can't see. And they're not affected by whatever it is that's taking the life of those that are looking.
Do you recommend it?
I didn't see it. I've read up on it.
It's scary.
It is scary.
Here's the thing. I'm not recommending it. I'm saying that you can learn a lesson. This is the latest... The latest craze. Everyone's talking about it. It's a hit film. People are copying it. And here's the point. The Baal Shem Tov taught that everything that we see or hear, everything that crosses into our consciousness, has a lesson for us. So what's the lesson? Those of you that have attended the last few weeks, you can tell me the lesson. But since I'm putting you on the spot, I'll tell you what the lesson is. The lesson is as follows. The way the world is created, as the Alter Rebbe writes in Tanya, in our own text, we said it a few weeks ago, we said it again last week. There is a divine truth that runs through all of existence. And if we would see that truth, we wouldn't exist. If our eyes were open, correct? Yeah. If our eyes were open to the reality of the divine light that is all-pervasive and permeating every single particle of existence, if we would see that, we wouldn't exist as self-defined, independent creatures. We simply would not exist on that level. We would be subsumed within the totality of reality. We wouldn't exist as independent creatures. In other words, if we saw, if the blindfolds were off, we would not exist. It's not a horror story, right? It's not a horrific end. It's becoming part of a greater light. And if you will, becoming subsumed within the greater source, granted, nonetheless, we would, our current state of existence would perish. We would not survive. We would not exist the way we currently exist if we would see the truth. So then how do we exist? Because as Kabbalah teaches, we don't see the truth. In a sense, God puts us, God puts upon us this giant cosmic blindfold that keeps us from seeing, from perceiving the truth. So instead of seeing the true reality that nothing else exists other than divine light, Ein od milvado, there's nothing other than God, as the Torah says. Instead of seeing that, what do we see? We have the blindfold. So again, a little bit different, but our blindfold tells us or signifies to us, I exist, the world exists, nature exists, existence exists as separate from a higher creator, a higher power. And so even if we believe that there's something ultimately above, the blindfold causes us to perceive it as two separate entities, two distinct realities. There's the higher reality, and then there's us, and both are legitimate. There's God's reality, and then there's our reality. But you know what? We also exist. The Alter Rebbe says, take off the blindfold. Take off the blindfold and see the truth. If you saw the truth, if you and I would see that the only true existence is God, and nothing else truly exists, we wouldn't remain as we were. We couldn't exist the way we exist. What would happen? What would it look like? Physically, spiritually? We haven't experienced it yet. Maybe it's like the story that we've told many times of the four that went into the orchard in the paradise, where only one survived, Rabbi Akiva, and the other three didn't make it. Maybe that's what it looks like. Who knows? But one thing is for sure. The Alter Rebbe says, the only way this whole construct works is because you and I don't see the true reality. The true reality of existence. Or the true reality of reality. And there's only one true reality. There's only one being, if you will, not to reduce God to a being. There's only one reality that is truly real and alive. Everything else is a derivative reality, whose existence is only by virtue of this power flowing through it. To reduce it, just to give it an example that we talked about before, to reduce it to, and it's not a good example, obviously, but it's somewhat of an example, to reduce it to some to an energy analogy, we could say, that imagine you unplugged all of the appliances, you took away electricity, right? From this building, the lights would go out, the refrigerator would stop working, the coffee machine wouldn't, the coffee machine would stop working, right? Everything would shut down, right? Because you've pulled the electricity. But stepping it up a notch, when it comes to divine energy or divine light, pull away the divine light, not only do you have bodies without souls, the very fabric of existence doesn't exist. In other words, even the matter, it's not only the energy doesn't exist, matter also doesn't exist. We know that matter and energy are anyway connected, right? Einstein. So here's the point. Matter doesn't exist. Nothing exists without divine energy, without divine light, without divine life force flowing through it. If we saw it, we couldn't be this. We couldn't be who we are. So again, like this example, like this film, that at the very core, its premise is, if you see, you no longer exist. You only exist when you don't see. It's literally, I say literally, I mean figuratively literally, which is how we use literally today, right? It's literally what Kabbalah teaches, that we only exist because we don't see truth. And then we ask the question, where's the blindfold from? Who created this blindfold? Do we create the blindfold? Does God create the blindfold? How are we blindfolded? Where's that coming from? In fact, the question was amplified. The question is amplified by virtue of the fact that that we don't exist, in the Kabbalistic understanding, we don't exist outside of God. Our entire reality and existence is found inside of God's reality, inside of God's source. So, if we are the light, and God is the source of light, like we're the ray and God's the sun, right? We're the emanation and God's the source. If that's the case, imagine this. Imagine the ray inside the sun. Imagine the light inside the source. Inside the source, there's no distinguishable, independent, individual ray or light. It's all source. So if we're always in the source, because Kabbalah teaches we're not outside the source, there's nothing outside of God. So if we're all in the source, how does this blindfold even exist? How is it possible to be blindfolded to the truth? How is it, in short, that we don't see the true reality? And that is that God is behind everything. Not only behind everything, God is running through, divine light is running through everything in existence. How don't we see that? How can you put a blindfold strong enough to block God's reality? That's the question. Who's stronger than God that can block out God? Right? The sun, we have, right, Ray-Bans for that, right? The monsters or the whatever it is in Bird Box, we have blindfolds. I was joking with somebody in Shul yesterday, saying, like, if you want to pull off the Bird Box challenge, no problem, but make sure it's a closed set with stunt drivers and directors, right, and all that stuff. So blindfold can block from seeing whatever it is that's getting everybody. But how are we blinded to God's reality if we're inside that reality itself? And that took us to chapter 4. Does everyone have a copy? Okay. So that took us to chapter 4, which we started last week. And in chapter 4, we discussed this. We explored two names of God used in Scripture. In fact, the two primary names of God that are used throughout the five books of Moses, throughout the Torah. And those two names are Hashem, not written Hashem, written four-letter name of God, Yod, followed by He, followed by Vav, followed by He. And that's one name. And the second name is Elohim. Also not written like that, but again, we're not supposed to pronounce God's name in vain. So as we're discussing it, I'm using alternate versions. So Kabbalah's alternate version for the first name is Havaya. That's moving the letters out of order. Havaya, if you want to spell it in English, it's H-A-V-A-Y-A, Havaya. And the second name of God is Elohim. So Havaya and Elohim. These are two names used throughout Scripture, and I explained last week that that has led some scholars, some biblical scholars in the last few hundred years, to posit that the Bible is actually a composite work. This is the documentary hypothesis. Since there are different names of God, must be there are multiple authors, and then it was woven together, but they kept original versions of the names, but it's really not one divine origin. And the Kabbalists would say, are you kidding me? Every time it uses a specific name of God, it's for a specific reason, and it connotes a certain dimension, if you will, without splitting God into different dimensions, it connotes a certain reality or posture of God. So Havaya connotes God's expansion, and Elohim connotes God's contraction. Two primary modalities of being. And so let me explain this, and we started this last week, but we're picking it up this week. So expansion and contraction, these are the two most primary movements of life. Think about the heart and the heartbeat. You have expansion and contraction, right? The breath, inhale, exhale, it's all about expansion and contraction. These are the two, push and pull, magnetic force. This is at the very core of reality. You have this duality of forward and back, expansion, contraction, giving, withholding. Okay. All of these emanate from a higher source, obviously, from God. Within God, we also have these two modalities of expansion and contraction. In Hebrew, when we talk about this in the context of emotive traits for you and I, let's say, so we would call it chesed and gevura. Chesed is kindness, it's giving. Chesed is benevolence, it's expansion, it's I have something, let me give it to you. It's love, it's giving, it's caring, it's about opening oneself up. That's chesed. And what is gevura? It's the complete opposite. It's withholding. It's severity, it's judgmentalism, it's not giving, it's right, it's all withholding. So, like I said last week, an open hand is chesed, a clenched hand is gevura. The most natural state of a hand, I think, is open. I think. It feels more natural, right? At least right now, to me, it feels more natural. If you have to clench it, right, it feels you're using more muscles. Chesed is open, gevura is closed. Chesed is expansion, gevura is contraction. Make sense? Yes? So open, closed. So when it comes to God, we say this in the prayers. We said it this morning in the prayers, in the Yeshabach. We talk about, we praise God, and we say, Hakel, the Lord. Hamelech, the King. And then we say two things, two adjectives about God. Hagadol v'hagibar. Hagadol means the great, and hagibar means the mighty. We call God great and mighty. Just not late for dinner. Joking. We call God great, and we call God mighty. So Kabbalah teaches, our text teaches, what does great mean and what does might, like, were we just throwing out adjectives? Like we looked in our old thesaurus, it's like, all right, how can we really, what can we say about God that would be meaningful? Right, let's get the Americans' greetings folks on this. Like, what are we saying about God? God, we love you. You're great, you're mighty, right? What does great mean and what does mighty mean? We're not just throwing out words. So great means something and mighty means something. So great is expansion, and mighty is contraction. Great is chesed, God's giving, and mighty is God's gevura, is God's contraction, withholding. Let's explain. So what does it mean that God gives? God's expansion, what does that mean? So from a singular source, with a capital S, from a singular source of everything, emanates. How many different atoms are in the universe? Are we in the billions? Are we in the trillions? We have billions of people, right? And that's just people. Let alone everything else in existence. Every blade of grass, every tree, every flower, every... And then that's only here. And then imagine the entire universe. There's a lot of stuff, right? There's a lot of things out there, all emanating from a singular source. Talk about expansion, right? Imagine you start off with one, and then you get massive numbers. That's expansion. Expansion in this context also means that God creates everything from absolute and abject nothingness. In the language of Kabbalah, it's yesh me'ayin. Yesh means something. Me'ayin means from nothing. So something from nothing is the way we term our existence, our creation. What does that mean? If everything comes from God, who are we to call God nothing? That sounds not nice. It's like, you know what God is to me? Nothing. Ah, how beautiful. The great, the mighty, and the nothing. I mean, that doesn't sound right. So we're something from nothing. So Kabbalah explains that what does a phrase mean? It means that we are a perceived something because we perceive ourselves as somethings. Reminds me of the joke. It's Yom Kippur. We have to throw in jokes, right? So, and Erica, you may have heard this joke before, but nonetheless. So it's the high holidays, and the rabbi and the cantor are up there in the front of the synagogue. Oh, we're in a synagogue even. And in the middle of the prayers, it's a very serious moment. The rabbi says, "Oh, I am nothing, I'm nothing." He's talking about his humility. "I'm nothing." And the cantor says, "I'm nothing, I'm nothing." And some guy, Yankel, in the back says, "I'm nothing, I'm nothing." And the rabbi turns to the cantor and says, "Look who thinks he's nothing. How dare he?" Anyway, you had to be there. So we say that we're something from nothing. It doesn't mean that God is nothing and we're something. It means that we're a perceived thing. We know what reality and existence means from our vantage point. It means things that are tangible and measurable. And God's reality is for us is immeasurable. So we call God the unknown quantity, right? We call God the nothing, not that God is nothing, but that God is the unknown and we're the known. So from our vantage point, we are yesh, something, and God is the ayin, God is the nothing. But what does all this mean? It means from the nothingness of God come so many somethings. How many somethings come from the nothingness of God? And to pull off something from nothing is quite the feat. In other words, if you tell me that you're going to give me something and I need to make another something, I can handle that. But give me nothing and tell me to make something, how am I going to do that? In other words, give me nothing of the created realm or reality and tell me to create something that looks like creation, looks like existence. You give a kid a box of Lego pieces, they can make any number of things. Right? If you give them a box of nothing, they're not creating anything. Well, they could use the box for something. But let's say you gave them a nothing box, which kind of looks like, I don't know, nothing. Right? You put them in an empty room. Now make something. Right? Like the line that we've been saying throughout this text is science is amazing. Right? Scientists are fabulous. They can take the most basic things and create and modify and manipulate, and that's wonderful. But you put a scientist in an empty room, in a vacuum, right, in an absolute empty space, and you tell them create something, create a vaccine, create a microchip out of nothing, and they'll tell you that's not how it works. I need something. It's going to be something. So we're great at taking something and making it into something else that's far greater than what we started with. We're great going yesh to yesh. Yesh, mayesh, we're great. Something from something, we can handle. Something from nothing, that's God's sandbox. Only God can take nothing and turn it into something. This too is an element of God's expansion. What does it mean that God is Hagadol, God is great? Not only do we mean that from one you get all this diversity, but you also go from nothing into something. So God's creative power, creative energy, and not only the energy of creation, but God's creative action to create a universe so diverse and so complex and so multifaceted, right? All this entire expanse of the universe to come from a singular God, to come from relative to this something, to come from nothing, is what we call and we refer to in the prayers as gadol. This is greatness. Greatness is expansion and creative expression. It's giving, it's bestowing, it's that movement from within to without. So if you want to picture it, if you want to visualize it, maybe artistically, you can picture like a source, some source, whether it's light or letters, like we've been talking about letters, it's a source, and from that source, it radiates outward. So it's a singular source, and then it radiates. It's a very diverse space that's broad and wide, and it becomes concretized from something ethereal to something more concrete. That is what we mean by Hagadol. So in the prayers, when we refer to God as great, what we mean is that God created all of this, and that's amazing. It's amazing for us because we're the beneficiaries of this, right? But that's what we mean in the prayers. Make sense so far? Any questions?
Maybe there's a song, Hagadol, and Hanora.
Yes. Vahanora. That's exactly the prayer. Yeah. Yeah, that's the Yishtabach. The awesome. Yeah. So Hagadol, the great, Hagadol, yeah, the great, Hagibar, the mighty, Vehanora, and the awesome. Yeah. Nora is also related to fear. But it's more awe. I like awe.
We're studying Hebrew.
Nice.
So we're trying to pick up.
So it's not, yeah, so it doesn't have the mem prefix, which would be the from. It's Veha and the Nora. Nora means the awesome one. Yeah.
And I find it fascinating that when the physicists break down matter and you keep breaking things down, the end result is essentially nothingness.
You know, there's a lot of empty space, but they're trying to get back down to one thing.
But essentially, you know, like you put all the matter in the universe.
You could fit in the, yeah, you could fit in the, yeah.
That essentially what, you know, even from a scientific standpoint.
What looks big is really, yeah, it's really oneness. There are theories in science, like oneness theories, like theories that try to bring everything down, reduce everything into one. Like even on a chemical level, like we had many elements, and then we had, you know, a periodic table that reduced it, and then we've reduced it further to, you know, electrons and neutrons. Like we're reducing and reducing at the core of everything. I'm not saying that science is going to come across at some point a God particle. I'm not saying that because I don't know that these two necessarily cross in a laboratory. But at least from a Kabbalistic perspective, everything, all of the diversity that we see. Well, but I think your point, either way, is valid in that what science shows us, especially modern science shows us, quantum physics shows us, is that if we could reduce it to this statement, let's reduce it to this statement, what we see is certainly not what is. That's certainly the truth. What appears to be is certainly not what is, even scientifically, let alone Kabbalistically and spiritually. So what appears to be this is not this. It's something else that just looks like this. So again, Kabbalah teaches everything comes from God, and God is the only true reality. And God's greatness is, what is God's greatness? How does it manifest itself? What is its definition of greatness? What is the definition of greatness? It means that God is expansive. God is giving. God is creating. God is bestowing life. God is granting other things a piece of himself. God is beyond gender, but we just use him. God is, right? God is granting a piece of himself to us. If we're alive, it's because God is bestowing us with life. So all of this is expressed by Gadol, by greatness.
Will our ability to perceive things change in the Messianic era?
Hold on. Perhaps. That's a strong guess for me right now. Yes, we'll get there in a second.
One last thing. Sorry to go back to the blindfolds.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm taking it too literally, but it's if we're not supposed to see the divine in everything, then why are we even here?
Oh my gosh. So these two points are connected. Okay. Absolutely connected. You see, this was going to be my big finish, but we'll do it now. It's fine. Kabbalah takes off the blindfold. That's the point of Kabbalah. Kabbalah is, its objective is taking off the blindfold and exposing us, that sounds negative, but exposing us to the truth in a way that we can still survive. So it's the best of both worlds. We exist, but we see the truth. In other words, this is absolutely the brilliance of Kabbalah. That it takes off the blindfold and reveals and shows us, illuminates the truth in a way that you and I can remain. After this class, you and I will walk outside and go back into our cars or walk the streets or whatever it is and resume, if you will, everyday activities, illuminated with a vision of a higher truth that can radically change our day-to-day behavior. And that's the goal. And that's also why Kabbalah has become more revealed as we get closer to the Messianic era, to Mashiach. Mashiach, which is a fundamental Jewish belief, As Maimonides, the great Jewish scholar, philosopher, physician, wrote nearly 1,000 years ago in his 13 Principles of Jewish Belief, number 12, Ani ma'amin be'emunah shelema beviat ha-mashiach v'af al-pi she'yismamea im kol ze'achakel b'chol yom she'yavo, I believe with perfect faith in the coming of Mashiach, and even though he may tarry, I still await for his coming every single day. It's a fundamental Jewish belief that we are working toward a better world. You ask anybody, what would you wish for the world? A better world? We have that built into our belief system. In fact, in yesterday's Torah portion, we read in the book of Exodus, we read when the Jewish people crossed the sea, the Torah says, Az Yashir Moshe Uvenei Yisrael. Then the Jewish people, Moses and the Jewish people sang a song to God, thanking God for the splitting of the sea and their salvation. But the language used, is not Az Shar Moshe, then Moses sang, grammatically, but Yashir, which means then Moses and Jewish people will sing. And the commentaries say this is a hint to Mashiach in the Bible. One of the many allusions. In the books of the prophets, it's extensively written. In the five books of Moses, it's alluded to. But it says, Az Yashir Moshe, that Moses will sing. When will he sing? And the Jewish people will sing. The future redemption of the coming of Mashiach. But what's my point, getting back to this discussion, your question? As we get closer to a better world, and even though the world seems like it's not necessarily getting better, in my opinion, and my opinion is that we're definitely evolving for the better. Just look, things that not too long ago would have been taken for granted, evils and horrors that would have been taken, or injustices that just a few decades ago would have been considered normal, today are being called out, which means that it's not normal. We don't consider it to be okay, right? That means we are evolving to a place where we are more sensitive to goodness and its opposite, to light and the opposite of light. That's all a measure, a mark of progress, even though the world is not perfect, but we're holding it to a more perfect standard. It's all signs of a positive evolution. Thus, as the Rebbe said many times, the closer we get to Mashiach, to a time when we will see the light, the truth, and still remain, we'll have the blindfolds off. We'll have to make Bird Box too, where Sandra Bullock can walk around and roam a new world with the light, and the light turns out to be maybe a positive light, and without a blindfold, that's the world of Mashiach. The reality of Mashiach is a world in which the truth is revealed, and we're all standing, and we remain standing. Kabbalah comes in to give us a taste of that, to give us a glimpse of that or a taste of that before it happens. In Kabbalistic parlance, sometimes it's likened to cooking for Shabbos, right? So you got to cook. If you want to eat on Shabbos, you got to cook before Shabbos. So you're cooking Friday afternoon. But how do you know if it tastes good on Shabbos? What do you do? Friday afternoon, as you're cooking, what do you do? Help me out here. You do some tasting, right? It's called Toyam Echaim Zachu. You taste a little bit of what's to come. You taste a little bit of the soup, but a little bit of the main course, and a little bit of the salad, right? You taste to make sure that you got everything right. We're in the year 5779. The Jewish year. Each year, each thousand, each millennia corresponds to a day. We're in the sixth day, right? Toward the evening. It's almost Shabbat in a cosmic historical sense. We're tasting the Shabbat food. That's what Kabbalah is. So people ask, why are we studying Kabbalah now? Back in the day, you had to know a guy, right? It's like, I know a guy by a tree. Let's hang out and let's study Kabbalah. It's like, so why is it so, you know, it's available today. It's available today, number one, because we need it. Number two, because we're tasting. It's a foretaste of what's to come. So the point of Kabbalah is to take off the blindfold. To take off the blindfold and to see the truth. So this is what Hagadol means. God's greatness is that God can create an expansive universe and grant it life, something out of nothing of that type, right? Nothing of that physical type existed before. It's new. It's Yesh Me'ayin. So what does Hagibar mean? What does it mean when we say in the prayers that God is not just great, but God is mighty. So remember, we had the duality. We had expansion and contraction. Right? We had giving and withholding. Revelation and concealment. So what is Hagibar? Gibar is the same word as Gevura. Gevura, Gibar. It's the same Gimel, Vet, Resh. The same word. Mighty. Gevura is contraction, withholding, etc. What does it mean in reference to God? So we're about to jump in inside and read this inside the text itself, in the Alter Rebbe's language. But I want to share with you just quickly outside and then we'll jump in. Give you a quick prelude. The Alter Rebbe is about to explain that what does mighty, what does mighty mean? Kibar, what does mighty mean? It means that even as God expands and God creates and God grants life, God does it in a way where He remains hidden. God conceals as He reveals. Imagine expanding, and while you're expanding, you're also contracting. As you're expressing, you're also hiding. We do this, by the way. We do this all the time. If you've ever told somebody something that wasn't true, you have expressed, you have demonstrated this duality of chesed and gevura, expansion and contraction at the same time. Because you've expressed something that was hiding on the truth. Correct? Right? So telling, I don't want to use a negative word, like lie. Oh, just use it. Telling something that's a non-truth, telling something that's not true, is in a sense an expression, a human form of this duality, where you're sharing and expressing, but you're not really revealing. You're actually hiding your true intention. So it's, you see how it's both? You're giving, but you're also withholding. So if you misrepresent your motive, intention, beliefs, agenda, etc., you're giving, but you're also withholding. And again, there are other forms. A riddle, right? A riddle is you're sharing an idea, but it's in a hidden way. So you're sharing something, but it doesn't make sense unless you see inside it. So the point here is going to be that even as God expresses and creates and expands the universe, God at the same time conceals and obfuscates and screens His true reality from the very creation that He expresses. And this is why we talk about in the prayers, Hagadol veHagibar. God expands and God contracts. God reveals and God hides at the same time. And that's why Scripture uses the two names of God, Hashem, Havaya, and Elohim. God is Havaya, the great emanator, the great expressor, and God is also Elohim, the great screener. God expands and God contracts. God reveals and God hides at the same time. Make sense?
Is there a relationship between that and the angels ascending and descending?
Could be. It doesn't immediately come to mind that exact connection. But it's definitely a dualistic movement, up and down, right, out and in, expansion, contraction. Definitely has that movement to it.
Is the point to like get more of a taste, like to get more people, or to, as a collective, to see it this way? Would we get there faster?
Well, I think that Mashiach is not actually, it's not a magical thing. It is a reality. In other words, when we care more about higher things, about the other, than our own egos, isn't that Mashiach? I mean, that is the better world that we all want. Right? A better world in which we care about each other and we're not seeking to harm each other. Doesn't get any better than that, right? I mean, that's, especially when you perceive that through a divine lens and see it as not only is my ego personally, am I, you know, not feeling my ego so strongly, but the entire fabric of the universe doesn't take itself as seriously as it does right now. That's all this enlightened state.
Yeah.
part of, I'll tell you, the Baal Shem Tov wrote a letter to his brother-in-law. I think it was his brother-in-law or one of his students. And he wrote in the letter that it was a certain Shabbat, and it was toward the end of Shabbat, which is considered to be the most holy time of Shabbat. So it's like Saturday evening, toward nightfall. And he said he went into a spiritually ascendant state. And he elevated to the upper realms, his soul elevated to the upper realms, and there he saw the chamber of Mashiach. And he asked Mashiach, "Emasai ka'asimar, when are you coming?" And Mashiach said, "L'cheshiyafutzu ma'inasecha chutzu, when your teachings become expanded, when your wellsprings expand throughout the universe, throughout the world." And so the way this is understood is that what is a very important step in Mashiach? It's this enlightenment, right? It's this awareness that is helped by the stuff that we study and Jewish teachings in general, but specifically more of the mystical teachings. And I will tell you that even though it might seem like, well, it's a very limited scope, Kabbalah and mysticism has, in a way, become very widespread in many different circles. Circles that wouldn't say or they wouldn't share about themselves that they're teaching Kabbalah, they're teaching Jewish mysticism, but the values and the teachings, the ethos, the perspective of Kabbalah is found in many different areas. It's also reflected in the arts. You see, from when this revolution, this movement, the Hasidic movement and the mystical movement really took force, you see revolutions in art, the emergence of abstract art, the emergence which again speaks to a reality beyond a reality, seeing things in a different way. Music fundamentally changed in many different ways. You see this expressed in many, many, many different areas of life itself. The Industrial Revolution, the Rebbe spoke about many times. Industrial Revolution happens in the 1800s, right? And it's right about then that you have an explosion in higher wisdom as well being revealed. Based on a statement from Zohar, which says that in the 600th year of the sixth millennia, i.e. the year 5600, in the Jewish count, there's going to be an explosion, there's going to be an opening of the fountains of wisdom from above and the fountains of wisdom from below. So human wisdom and divine wisdom will both be opened up in a large measure. And that's the year 1840. It works out to the year 1840. The Rebbe spoke about this many times. It's a statement from the Zohar, which was written 2,000 years ago. And it lines up with things that we've seen and revolutions that we've seen both in the promulgation and the expanse of Kabbalah, as well as the advancement of human knowledge. And it's all based on verses that speak about the lifetime of Noah. Remember Noah? Noah and the floods? Banned? Noah, Noah's Ark? So it says, in the 600th year of Noah's lifetime, the heavens, the rain came from above, and the water came from below. And the Zohar says, this will also happen in the future time, when you'll have a time when divine wisdom will become revealed from above, and also earthly wisdom will become stirred. That's what it says. This is Kabbalistic Nostradamus for you. I'm kidding, it's not Nostradamus. This is straight up Zohar. This is Kabbalah.
So, I just want to understand something. When you said the Rebbe would say, which Rebbe are you talking about? Shneur Zalman, the one that wrote...
So, I'm speaking of my Rebbe, the seventh. Rabbi Schneerson. Yeah.
Okay, so in his discourse... But he's a current, he's a
contemporary
person.
Yeah.
You're talking about...
So he would reflect... So one second. So in the Zohar written by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai 2,000 years ago,
right.
It says, and I don't remember the exact wording in the Aramaic, but it says, it quotes the verses about Noah and the flood, and it says, in the 600th year, not of Noah's lifetime, but of the sixth millennia, what will happen is the fountains or the storehouses of wisdom above will open up, and the wisdom below will also open up, and there's going to be a radical revolution of wisdom and enlightenment in the world. That's what it says.
Okay.
And so our Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, who passed away in 1994, right? So he taught that he pointed this out and said that you can actually trace it. And you can see how Kabbalah radically expanded right about then, and how you have revolutions in human knowledge, industrial revolution and other things, you know, mechanizing things and manufacturing, all this stuff, which really takes off right about that time. Either way, the point is, I'm not sure how we got to this, I guess we were talking about Kabbalah.
How did Kabbalah expand?
So in 1840, there were certain texts that were published for the first time that brought out Kabbalah to the masses.
In 1840?
Right about there, yeah. Well, yeah, that for sure made it more accessible, but you have certain texts that were published right around that time. No, not translated. But it starts the process. Gets the process started. Anyway, okay, so what's the point? The point is that Kabbalah, getting back to enlightenment and what Mashiach means, etc., it's all a product of us. It's not a magical thing. It's not like, ooh, magic is going to happen and suddenly, like, aliens are going to come and they're going to transport us to a better world. That's not it. It's we're going to get our act together. We're going to just be better people, more enlightened people. Again, every good and decent human being that's ever lived has, I would hope, has wanted an end to jealousy and anger and violence and hate and animosity, right? All these things. We want a good world where people treat each other like a mensch. And on a deeper level, this is a product of seeing yourself less and seeing the other more and seeing something outside of yourself as opposed to inside yourself. That's all. It's all connected to these ideas. All right, let's jump into the text. So if you have a booklet, a printout, you can find this.
So, how does this tie into what you emailed us on Friday about the rock?
The paradox, we're about to get there.
I had to read that.
Yeah, we're about to, yeah. Yes, can God create a rock that he himself can't lift? That's the paradox. Right, so if you say, right, so this is the omnipotence paradox. So, how all-powerful is God? Is God so powerful that he can create a rock so heavy that he himself can't lift? If you say he can't create such a heavy rock, well, you're limiting God. If you say he can create a rock that he can't lift, well, then you're limiting his strength to lift it. So either way, you're stuck. So what does Kabbalah say? We're going to get there in a moment. That's going to be Hagibar. You'll see that in a moment. Trying to find where we're starting here in this booklet. We're starting... Yeah, it is. You are right. Yep, let's do this. Let's start. I like to get a running start. I like to step back a few steps and jump in. All right, let's start in the booklets. On 38, third paragraph, where it says, in the enumeration of the praises. Okay, you see that? In the enumeration of the praises. So that's, and in the book, it is page 43. Okay, let's jump in. In the enumeration of the praises of the Holy One, blessed be He, it is written, Hagadol, the Great, Hagibar, the Mighty, and so on. Those are the two we're going to focus on. Hagadol, the Great, refers to the attribute of chesed, kindness, all things that we've talked about up until now, and to the spreading forth of the life force into all the worlds and created things without end or limit. In other words, infinite expansion. Not limited expansion, infinite expansion without end or limit or measure. So, and what is the nature of this expansion? So that they shall be created, ex nihilo, something from nothing, and exist through gratuitous kindness. In other words, chesed chinam, God has, in a sense, has no expectations. God is just giving. True giving and expansion is no strings attached. If it's strings attached, that's withholding. Right? I can still pull it back. This is open-handed giving, expansion, chesed, kindness. The attribute of chesed is called gedula, greatness, for it derives from the greatness of the Holy One, blessed be He, from Himself in all His glory. In other words, this is what it means that God is great. This is God's greatness. God's greatness is captured in His ability to expand and create something from nothing. For God is great, and His greatness is unsearchable. What does it mean, unsearchable? It means infinite inasmuch as it is infinite. And therefore, He also causes life force and existence ex nihilo to issue forth for an unlimited number of worlds and creatures. That's why you can't count how many atoms, how many molecules, how many particles are in the universe. Go try to count. You'll end up with a huge number, and maybe an ever-evolving and ever-adding number as the universe continues to expand and as creatures continue to expand. So God's expansion, God's greatness is truly, Kabbalistically at least, without end and infinite. And he sums it up by saying, for it is the nature of the benevolent to do good. God is chesed. God is a giver. God has that attribute of giving. Therefore, God gives and expands and creates and produces and energizes and gives life to an ever-growing infinite number of beings. Let's continue. Now, all of this again is just recapping what we've said. Now, this attribute of Hagadol, the attribute of chesed that spreads forth His life force into all the world so as to create them ex nihilo. So, this ability to go from oneness to infinite expansion and to grant them life is exclusively the praise of the Holy One, blessed be He. When we talk about God being Hagadol, the great, with all due respect to number 99, who's a hockey fan here? Come on, 99, Wayne Gretzky, known as the great one. The great one, anybody with me? I grew up in Pittsburgh. I know, I grew up in Pittsburgh, so huge. We paid, I know, where's Tim? Tim, my hockey guy. Tim, if you're watching, we love you and we miss you. Save us from the blindfold. What?
He was a penguin.
Well, not when Mary Lemieux was a penguin, number 66. Wayne Gretzky started off as an Edmonton Oiler and then famously went to the Los Angeles Kings and other teams. Here's the point. This is the cabal of hockey. This just happened. So, with all due respect to who we call in hockey the great one, God is, as he says here, the only one, the only reality that can be truly termed great. Because if great means infinite expansion and bestowing life, well, there's only one reality that fits that criteria. And the only reality that fits that criteria is God. God is the only reality that is fit to be termed Gadol, Hagadol, the great one, the great. Let's continue. For no created thing, in other words, nothing that's a derivative of this greatness, no created thing can in turn create a being out of nothing and give it life, as I said before. We're all the created beings that came out of nothing. We don't have that power to grant somethingness to nothingness. We can't do that. We can try. Hasn't happened yet. Let's continue. Furthermore, he says, this attribute of benevolence, whereby God creates ex nihilo, is also, not only can we not do it, furthermore, it's also beyond the cognition, let me use a better word, the comprehension of all creatures and their understanding. In other words, not only can you and I not do it, you and I can't even understand it. Now, we can pretend like we understand it. We can sit here and say, yeah, God, well, we can't do it, but God can do it. But what does that mean? What does that look like? How do you do that? We can't understand that. We can understand that we can't understand, but then we understand that we can't understand, right? Then we know that we're not knowing, but he's pointing out we don't know. There's yedias hametzias and yedias hanasagas hamahus. I'm using phraseology, let me explain. There's knowing that something exists, and then there's knowing how it exists. To know that God did this, we know because we're here. That God created something from nothing and granted it life in an infinite, expansive way. To know that that happened, we know because we're the byproducts of that and we exist. But to know how God did that and to know what that looks like and to know what that feels like, that we have no clue. In other words, we know that it exists, but we don't know what it is and how it works. So on one level, we know, but we don't really know. Hopefully, we know that we don't know. Let's continue. For it is not within the power of the intellect of any creature to comprehend through the faculty of Chachma or understand through the faculty of Bina this attribute and its ability to create a being out of nothing and vivify it. You and I, with our cognitive powers of chachma or bina, which are translated here as wisdom or understanding, comprehension or understanding. We don't have time to get into this, the specifics between chachma and bina right now. It's for a different class. The point is, you and I, through the power of our mind, we can't fully wrap our minds around that experience of infinite expansion, of divine gadol, divine greatness, divine creation, something out of nothing. We can't wrap our heads around it. We can't do it, can't replicate it, and we can't even understand it fully. For, let's continue, for creatio, ex nihilo, is a matter which transcends the intellect of all creatures, inasmuch, since it stems from the divine attribute of gedula. He says, since it's from God's infinite attributes, so how do you think you should be? Why do you think that you should be able to understand it? Why should a human being be able to wrap their heads around God's infinite expression? It's infinite, and we have finite brains, finite minds. So of course we can't understand it. Not only can we not do it and replicate it, we can't even understand it, and that makes sense that we can't understand it. There shouldn't be an expectation otherwise. Make sense? Now, let's continue. And now we get to the new stuff. Now we get to the big stuff. Sorry, we get to the mighty stuff. Now, the Holy One, blessed be He, and His attributes, attributes being what we talked about, expansion and contraction, giving, withholding, etc. Chesed, Gvura, Havaya, Elohim, Gadol, Gibor, right? His attributes. God and His attributes are a perfect unity. This is very important. As the Holy Zohar states, it says in Kabbalah, well, the primary Kabbalistic work that I cited before, he and his... Is that a copy of the Zohar?
Yeah.
Nice. As the Zohar states, he, God, and his attributes... and his causations, attributes are one. It says, Ihu v'garmohi chad. God and his attributes are one. Let's continue. And just as it is impossible for the mind of any creature to comprehend its creator, go figure out God, right? Impossible. So it is impossible for it to comprehend his attributes, for they are one with him. In other words, just as you can't understand God, God's essence, you also can't understand God's modalities of expression or, as we'll talk about soon, contraction. So even though you might say, well, I can't understand God, but maybe I can understand God's expression. As God creates and God expands, maybe that is accessible to my mind. No. God and His attributes are one, meaning even God's expression, contraction, Gadol, Gibor, Havaya, Lukim, Chesed, Gvura, are also beyond our comprehension ultimately. We can understand, we can talk about it, but we cannot fully fathom it itself. From the inside out. Make sense? Aha, it shouldn't. All right, trick question. Let's continue. Okay, and just as it is impossible for the mind of any creature to apprehend his attribute of gedula, which is this greatness, expansion, creation, which is the ability to create a being out of nothing and give it life, as it is written, the world is built by the create, i.e. created through the attribute of kindness. It says, Olam chesed yibana. You know, we may have built this city out of rock and roll. We built this city out of rock, right? Out of rock. But we built this world. God built this world out of chesed. Why chesed? Because chesed is literally the expansion and creation of the universe, the creative power of God, expressing itself throughout the universe to create all this diversity and all this being, somethingness out of nothingness. So just like we can't understand that, here we get to the big finish, or the big second point. Exactly so is it impossible for it, for the mind, to apprehend, to understand the divine attribute of gevura, might, and restraint, which is the faculty of tzimtzum, contraction, restraining the spreading forth of the life force from his attribute of gedula. So he says, just like you can't fathom, the human mind, you and I, can't fathom God's greatness, God's infinite expansion, and what that means and how that looks like in God's bestowing life, so too, we cannot fully, we cannot ever wrap our heads around and fully comprehend God's, the opposite of that, God's contraction and withholding, God's concealment, God's hiding himself within that very process of creation. Let's continue. What does the attribute of Gevura do? What does this attribute of concealment do? Preventing it, understand, I'll explain this in a moment, preventing it, preventing the divine energy flow from descending upon and manifesting, revealing itself to the creatures, this is the blindfold, to the creatures and providing them with life and existence in a revealed manner, but rather with his countenance concealed. In other words, what does the divine attribute of Gevura do as opposed to Gedula? It's the divine blindfold. It prevents the divine light that is creating and expanding everywhere from being visibly seen and perceived by the very creatures that it creates. So God's Gedula expands. It's the light expanding. And God's Gevura is withholding that expansion. Not in an existential way, but in a revelatory way. Not that the light is not reaching that destination. It has to create it, to produce it. Right? If this emanation, God's emanating energy, that emanation, is the very life force of all beings, so it has to hit every being to give it life. Gevura, God's withholding energy, what it does is it prevents the light, not this energy, not from reaching the recipient, but from being seen within the recipient, from being revealed within the recipient. In other words, the recipient is receiving, or in totality is an expression of, even better, and is an expression of the divine life force, but will not see that and be aware of that. How? Why not? If that's who you are, if that's what this is, why don't we see it? Because of the magic and the mystery of God's Gevura that withholds this truth from being revealed. And this is what we would call the cosmic blindfold. The blindfold that God emanates as well throughout all of His creation, throughout all of existence, to conceal it in the very moment of His revelation. Because remember, creating is a revelatory, it's expanding, it's producing, it's out. At the very time that God is expanding and revealing, God is also, at the very self same time, God is, in that very moment, concealing that expression to the recipients, or to the products, to the expression, the manifestations of that expression of life. And this produces beings that exist, that are self-aware, and that don't perceive their source. Or don't perceive themselves as nothing but source.
So it's more of a filter.
It's a filter. It's straight up a filter.
But you could also say that the Gevura gives shape then to that which we perceive.
Yeah. It gives shape in the sense that it definitely affects. Listen. The fact that I see myself as me and you see yourself as you, and I don't see myself as you and you don't see yourself as me, that distinction, even though we both share a soul, and even on a physical level, we both share the same divine energy, the fact that we see ourselves as distinct, I'm not you, you're not me, right? That very fact, that shape, that definition, that's a Gevura definition. It's not a Chesed definition. It's not an expansion. It's coming from that second attribute that we sing God's praises. We say, God, you are great and you are mighty. You infinitely have your presence has expanded in the entire vast, infinite space of existence, and at the same time, we don't see it. We can learn about it, and we can meditate on it, and we can live by it, and we can try to see it. We don't see it. We don't see it. If you saw it, like we said before. If you saw it, you wouldn't be you. So there's no you anymore. Right? If you saw that, you couldn't be you. Right? You would be part of the source. So you would cease to exist. Like, again, I drew the example from the movie in the beginning, from Bird Box. Like, if you see it, right? So the best we could do now is learn and meditate, study and meditate and take to heart and take to mind and live by this higher truth that has so many practical ramifications, right? We've discussed many times. If only we took ourselves less seriously, much of the conflict that we go through in life, now it takes, you need both parties. It helps if both take themselves less seriously. Most conflict would disappear, right?
If we took ourselves
I don't mean that we disrespect ourselves. What I mean is if we saw ourselves as divine beings, and we saw the other as a divine being, or we saw reality as nothing but, right, nothing but God's place, the world would be transformed. People wouldn't hurt each other. People wouldn't be seeking to take advantage of each other. People wouldn't be seeking to manipulate and to harm and to lie and to cheat and steal and murder. I mean, this horrific story with this young girl. Right? This 13-year-old girl. You can't fathom the horror. Can't fathom the horror. You know what I'm talking about, right? This girl who's... Guy shot her parents.
In front of her.
Well, the father was shot at the door. I just read the details this morning. Father was shot at the door. The mother right in front of her. They were hugging each other in the shower, hiding. They went into the bathroom, locked the door, barricaded it, drew the shower curtain. He went through the house.
But how brave of her.
Yeah, she got out.
I mean, what a brave...
Yeah, no, thank God for her. It's happy ending. But I'm saying, like, what kind of... Where is this? What is this? What is this?
So although we might not fully see it, the point is to be aware of it so we can start...
Yes, we can start integrating this. Even if we didn't see it, even if we don't see it in its totality, even if we don't melt away and disappear and undo ourselves, we can live better lives. Listen, if we saw the world, the physical world, as nothing but a manifestation of God's... As godly, how would we treat our world? Think about that. How would we treat the environment, the world? We would treat it with white gloves, right? With care and love, knowing this is not just our planet, just our, you know, we can do whatever we want with it. This is divine energy we're messing around with. Be careful. This is broad. The implications of these ideas are very broad. The big idea of today is the fact that we don't see it. And why not? Because God, just as God has an infinite ability to expand and create and to reveal, God also likewise has an equally infinite ability, unstoppable ability to hide and conceal.
So you've said in the past that everything in existence has a soul. And that I'm thinking about what you're saying about now about the concealment, that there's different levels of soul within a rock, within a plant, within an animal, within us. And I'm wondering if the world that we're perceiving isn't, in fact, we're seeing different levels of concealment.
Yes. Yes.
That's what we perceive.
Correct.
Something.
Yes. Yes. And the angels, why do we say that souls and angels, unencumbered by the physical reality, why are they higher, so to speak? Not physically higher, but why are they? Because they have less concealment. So, you're exactly right. Kabbalah says that differing degrees, whether it's in this world, right, between inanimate, vegetative, animal, and human life, or whether it's in the cosmic realms, what differentiates one level from another, the hierarchy of being, spiritual hierarchy, is the degree of revelation versus concealment. When you have more revelation, less concealment, it's a higher realm. As the concealment, as the light becomes screened, someone said screen before, I think, as the light, as the divine truth becomes more screened, more hidden, things become more self-aware. So human beings, yeah, the four kingdoms of reality here, the way it's explained in Kabbalah, from below, Dom, Tzemeach, Chayim, Adabar, inanimate, vegetative, animal, and human, that distinction lies in the degree of revelation.
So we can see the limitations below us, but we can't go above us.
We can. When we study Torah, when we do a mitzvah, do something good, we can touch that. But see it? It's hard to see it. Look, Kabbalah teaches when we do a mitzvah, every mitzvah we do unleashes incredible light and unleashes incredible light in the universe. Do you see it? If we saw it, how awesome would that be, right? We don't see it because, again, we have these, we're blindfolded. We walk through life blindfolded. Anyway.
A
tzaddik sees it, yeah. To a certain extent. Every tzaddik would be on a different level, right? Because no one is the same, right? So everyone's different. A tzaddik definitely has you know, more less opaque, has a less opaque blindfold. You know those blindfolds that you can still see through? You know? Yeah. I'm sure Sandra Bullock in the movie.
It's kind of with the bird. Bath. Right. It's kind of with the bird box. They can kind of see shadows.
Yeah.
But I have to just mention something at the end, just so you know. They took off their blindfolds.
Wait. No spoiler alerts.
I'll tell you that because I think it's
they do take it off. Context. Interesting.
Yes, because everybody's blind. Right. Well, not everybody, but the people in the room.
Yeah.
Because I think that's different than they have to wear their blindfold and everybody's blind too.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I didn't see it, but I read enough about it to be dangerous.
Yeah, it's not.
And to apply it.
You don't have to rush.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get back to the text. So just as God is infinitely expansive, God also conceals this expansion. Let's continue. For the life force conceals itself in the body, right? For the life force, God's life force, God's gedula, God's chesed, God's greatness, conceals itself in the body of the created being, making it appear as if the body of the created being has independent existence. This is not a theory. This is a fact. Listen, I don't like speaking for anyone else, but I will confidently say this. You see yourself as an independent being. When I say independent, you see yourself as you. Well, you see yourself as me, but not me, you, me. All right, you're with me, right? So, everyone sees themselves as me. I'm a thing. I exist. Mazel tov. You are looking at life through the blindfold, through God's gevura. The life force is concealed, and this force and making it appear as though the created being was not merely an extension of the life force in the spirituality that creates it, just like the diffusion of the radiance and light of the sun, but rather an independently existing entity. In other words, God's screen, God's concealment, God's contraction, God's tzimtzum, whatever you want to call it, what this does is it makes it appear as though the created thing is its own thing, independent, and not just light emanating from the sun, i.e. nothing of its own. It's just merely coming from a source. Although in reality, the created being has no independent existence and is only like the diffusion of the light from the sun. All of existence, you and I, are merely rays of light from the divine sun. And just like light has no substance on its own other than source, if you were like a flashlight, if you turn off the flashlight, the light that was emanating doesn't still exist. It disappears because there's no light. It's only source radiating. Right? There's no such thing called light. It's only source emanating outward. You shut the source down, there's no light anymore. It's not like there's two separate entities. Water, right? Difference, Kabbalah says, between water and light. So here's my source, and I pour it. This exists. Independent of this, two separate things now. Right? When it comes to light, you have the lights on, and they're shining. You shut off the lights, and it goes dark immediately. Because the light doesn't exist. It can't exist outside the source. We don't exist outside the source. And yet, we perceive ourselves as existing outside the source. To the point that we say, maybe there's no source. Who says there's a source? How does this happen? How is it possible? God pulls this off also. Do you understand how God created everything from nothing? No. So this is the big finish. Just like we can't understand God's creative ability, we also can't understand God's ability to conceal this truth from all creatures. Let's continue. Nevertheless, this nullification, the fact that we are nothing but a ray of light from God's source light, this nullification is not felt by created beings, even though they are but a diffusion of God's activating force. Why? For this capacity, for self-concealment, God's self-concealment, and our self-consciousness, self-awareness, is precisely the restraining power of the Holy One, blessed be He, who is omnipotent. God can do anything, including hide Himself. And hence, God is able to condense the life force and spirituality which issues from the breath of His mouth and to conceal it, so that the body of the created being shall not become nullified out of existence. In other words, God can pull this off too. Three more paragraphs. It is beyond the scope of the mind of any creature to comprehend the essential nature of the tzimtzum, this is the contraction, of this hiding, of this tzimtzum and concealment, and to comprehend that nonetheless, the tzimtzum notwithstanding, the creature itself is to be is is created ex nihilo. Just as it is not within the capacity of the mind of any creature to comprehend the essential nature of the creation of being out of nothing. In other words, just like you and I can't understand how God creates something out of nothing, you and I can't understand how when God creates something out of nothing, the product of that creation, i.e. the creature, doesn't perceive how they were created out of nothing. How is that possible? If you're created out of nothing, if you're nothing but divine energy, how do you not see it? Go figure. God pulls that magic trick off too. God conceals as He reveals, and both are expressions of God's infinite ability that defy our logic. So just like we can't understand God's infinite expression, we can't understand God's ability to conceal that expression. But God does both. God creates all, and God hides that reality from all to produce what we have. So in the final analysis, if we ask the question differently, Erica, if we ask the question, can God create a being that doesn't recognize that they are a created being? Can God limit Himself and His expression to the point that creation doesn't perceive that reality? Can God limit Himself? The answer is yes. Is that a limitation? No. In the Kabbalistic imagination, God creating a rock that He can't lift, creating a shield that He won't break through, we have to peel it away. God is not going to pull back the blindfold and shock us out of existence. That's not the plan. Can God create a rock limitation that He can't, I don't know if He can't, that He won't break? Yes. Is that a limitation? Nope. God's concealment is not a limitation. It's another expression of God's power. God's infinite power of expression is coupled by and mirrored by God's infinite capacity of self-concealment. All in order to create self-aware, self-conscious, independent beings that God trusts will one day pull off the blindfold and see the world as it truly is. Thank you very much for joining me this morning for Kabbalah and Coffee.